Well, welcome to the Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast, hosted by the BYU Management Society Salt Lake Chapter. I'm Dave Austin.
I'm Britton Austin.
I'm Chase Austin.
I'm Bethany Miners.
And I'm Caitlin Mingleson.
And part of the mission of the BYU Management Society Salt Lake Chapter is to provide scholarships to service-oriented high school seniors.
Each year, approximately 50 deserving students are awarded scholarships to local colleges and trade schools.
And if your family or business would like to join in providing scholarships to these future leaders by sponsoring a podcast, please contact us at byupodcast.slc@gmail.com, and we'd love to speak with you.
And each time we do one of these interviews, I am so excited for the opportunity. I feel like I learn more than anyone by virtue of the chance to listen to each of our amazing guests. And today we have the absolutely incredible opportunity to speak with someone who needs no introduction, best-selling author, and all-around amazing person, Brandon Sanderson. Brandon,
hello.
Welcome and thank you for being here.
It is my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
We were hoping for Magellan.
Magellan, when other people talk, he decides he needs to talk. And when he talks, he does not use an inside voice. This is my pet parrot. He is 3 years old, and he likes to let people know it. He is quite loud.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, Brandon, I'd love for you to just take this opportunity, unique opportunity for us, but for you to maybe tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the point that you're at in your career and maybe what makes you tick.
Okay. Well, I am a novelist of primarily science fiction and fantasy. I started writing when I was actually on my mission. The first stories I did when I was a kid. I started my first novel when I was on my mission. I went to BYU my freshman year as a chemistry major because my mother convinced me that that's a good way to get scholarships, speaking of scholarships. And indeed, I did get some scholarships, but I quickly found I did not belong in chemistry. They wisely put you in weeder courses your freshman year to say, hey, is this what you actually want to be doing for the rest of your life? And my answer was no. when I went on my mission, I served in Seoul, Korea. I was very happy to be on a different continent from chemistry, but I missed writing, which I had been doing as a hobby. So I went to my mission president and said, hey, can I work on stories on P-Days? He's like, hey, you know, if you don't want to play basketball, actually it's Korea, so it was ping pong. Well, the other elders are, yeah, sit and write your stories. So I got a notebook and just started writing, telling stories. You don't get a lot done for 2 hours a week on P-Days. And so it was that I finished the novel about a year after I got back from my mission. And I realized this is what I want to do. This is me. So I changed my major to English, which you don't actually have to do to be a novelist. There are many successful novelists from all kinds of backgrounds, but I figured it was the thing to do. So I changed my major to English and I started writing, and I got a job working a graveyard shift at a hotel because they let me write while I was at work. And it's a running theme in my early career is, can I write while I'm doing this other thing? If so, then it's something I'm going to be more likely to do. Over the next 8 years, I wrote 13 novels. And I eventually in 2003 sold one, got I got back from a mission in 97, and I sold something in 2003. So it was more like 6 years. 2 years later, that book came out. It's called Elantris. Since then, in the 20 years following, I have been writing books at a furious pace because I am kind of compulsive about this. And that is me. It's what I do. I currently teach creative writing at BYU as well.
Awesome. Hi, I'm getting ready to serve a mission right now, and you're my favorite author. And one of the reasons why is because, you know, in like everyday fantasy novels, you can kind of find a lot of this kind of unclean content, you know, that, you know, someone preparing to be a missionary specifically trying to avoid. And so for me, I really enjoy your books because I can avoid that. And I know I'm can avoid that by reading your books, but I'm still entertained. And I also I'm sure you get criticism for this, you know, I'm sure you, and for being the kind of person you are with your background and whatnot, And I was just wondering if you could speak to this and how you handle this.
Yeah. So I've always been a fan of classic Hollywood, which was able to do mature themes without objectionable content. And I believe that that is, in fact, when I read a book, I find things like this, often the sex scenes, to be so cringy and so uncomfortable that, like, I don't even want to approach trying to write something like that. And even in even the best writers, I feel like these are things that a fade to black is just so much so much more classy. And it doesn't, like, we've accidentally, maybe not accidentally, but we've unfortunately conflated mature themes with mature content in our society. And I don't like that. Excuse me. I think you can do very mature themes. And I try not to shy away from them. And one thing I divide in my head is whether something's a mature theme or mature content. Because I do want to have mature themes. I do want to have people wrestling with difficult questions and difficult decisions, and sometimes making what I would consider the wrong decision, but others might consider the right decision. This is important to me. But at the same time, I want to be able to hand the book to somebody and look them in the eye, and know that they're going to read something that they're going to enjoy and not be made uncomfortable by. How about that? It is weird, though, because you kind of have to use in all of these things your own personal line. And where that line falls for each person is really individual. We saved these two emails. I got two emails on the same day because a chapter of, I believe it was Oathbringer, the third Stormlight novel, went live. We were doing sample chapters. Every day we'd release a new one or something like that. And I got two emails on the same day. One was from someone who said, why do you so artificially avoid sexual content in your books? It makes it hard for me to suspend my disbelief. It looks so artificial and fake. I wish you wouldn't do that. And the same day I got an email from someone who said, I thought you were a good member of the church. Why are you including this crud in your book? It is so offensive to me. I wish you would do better and talk to your stake president. And I will constantly get both of those. There was a scene of a husband hugging his wife and noticing certain parts of her features that a husband notices about a wife. And so it is interesting. I use my own personal line, I guess is what I'm saying here. And I try to write books that will be that are uplifting, but are also honest. And that back and forth is a back and forth in me. It's actually a more difficult decision on the Violets. I'm writing action adventure. And I do want to have fun action scenes. Cause I think action is fun. I love a Jackie Chan movie, and I don't watch a Jackie Chan movie thinking, oh, those poor people getting punched. I think, look at the physicality, that is involved in this amazing display and performance. But you can easily take that and stray into, look how fun it is to chop people's limbs off. Ain't that great? And there's another line right there where I'm like, I don't want to glorify violence, but I do want to have great action. And are those two things are they mutually exclusive, or can you do? And so there's lots of conversations I have in my head regarding these issues.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for detailing so much of your process. That is absolutely amazing. I have been a fan of Brandon Sanderson books for a long time, and it's great to hear a little bit more of that, of the process that goes into writing each every one of these. And that actually relates to my question. I, as reading these amazing books, have been wondering a little bit about how a character or a situation is created in your mind. And I was wondering if that relates to a certain ideal or a belief that you may have. What is your process of creating these immensely complex characters?
So I am always searching for the conflict in the character and the passions of the character and what they're trying to achieve, and kind of the road they're on. Tolkien and C.S. Lewis had an interesting disagreement. I don't know if you're familiar with the fact that they were in a writing group together, and they were both devout in their own religions, though Tolkien always considered it a failing on his part that he was instrumental in C.S. Lewis converting to Christianity, but C.S. Lewis picked Protestantism, and Tolkien was Catholic, and always felt he'd failed a little in not getting C.S. Lewis to be a Catholic. Which is interesting. People don't pay attention to that aspect of it. Screwtape Letters is dedicated to Tolkien, for instance. They had a disagreement about writing, and this was whether writing should be allegorical or not. C.S. Lewis, you've read *Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe*. You'll probably understand his belief on the matter. He believes that writing is didactic primarily; that one of the main purposes of it is to teach a lesson. Tolkien didn't believe that, at least not in the strict allegory sense. I don't want to put words in his mouth. You'd best read what he said. But the gist of it that I've been able to get is he says, look, I don't mind if my books teach people things, but I don't go into my books wanting to tell an allegory or having a specific moral I want to teach. I instead want to tell a story and let the characters be the thing that inspires, not my sense of morality. And I am much more on this side. I don't go into a book saying I'm going to teach a lesson. I don't go into a book saying, here's this principle or whatnot. I go into a book saying, here's a person. Here's a person wrestling with things and wrestling with difficult things. I think life, our life, is based around the idea of good but better. And we often are confronted with, we often like to in church talk about, oh, here's the evil choice and here's the good choice. And you should make the good choice. The primary answer is don't smoke. It's bad for you. Right. But the real depth of the gospel is not about that. It's about God has commanded you both to have a family and to stay in the garden. Which do you choose? Because they are now mutually exclusive. You have two choices to make, and you have to take two things and you have to give up one for the other. What are you going to give up? That's a decision. That's a story, right? And those are the things that I'm looking for. I'm looking to tell stories about people who are making tough choices and wrestling with these things. And I sincerely believe that the book's job is not to give you answers. The book's job is to show how one person wrestled with these issues, that maybe that will help you when you're wrestling with something similar, make a decision that might be opposite of the character, might be the same, might go down a different path completely. But I look for that. I look for what's the struggle going to be? Where's the character? What are they growing to be? What's most accurate for who they are? And how can I represent that as best I can? I, as a reader, always want, if someone approaches putting my beliefs or a person like me in their books, I want them to do their research and I want them to do it accurately. This is something that does not happen to us very often as members of the church. I don't know how many books you've read where we show up, but almost always it is very obvious that they have not done the least bit of research on who we are and what we actually believe, right? And that's okay. I mean, I don't like it, but it's better than we put a member of the church in and they are the basest straw man there to be taught how dumb they are. That just drives me up the wall. I absolutely hate that. I never want to be that person with someone else's beliefs. So whether it's something that feels Buddhist derived, whether it's humanism, whether it's atheism, agnosticism, theism, reformism, whatever it is, when I put it in my book, I want to be doing the best job I can with it. I want the atheist to read my book and be like, wow, he's secretly an atheist because I have listened to what people say and what the humanist arguments are in this path and do the best job I can with it. Because I feel like if I'm doing that with every character, then I will explore the world better and truth will rise to the top. I don't think truth is ever served by bad arguments on the other side. So that's kind of a long-winded answer for, I don't want to teach anything specific, but I love that my stories do teach.
Something I really admire about you is that you're more than an author. You're also a businessman. You've started a successful company. And I have noticed that a lot of your core team at Dragon Steel is made up of people that have been a part of your life for decades now. Some of them all the way back to your time at BYU. And was curious, what values do you promote in your company that has encouraged these very talented people to want to stay with you and to continue to work with you throughout the years?
Good question. This is very appropriate for this podcast. I don't get to talk about this aspect of it very often. I'm the only author that I know in the entire world who has an HR director. This is because I am very entrepreneurial. I have from the beginning wanted to not just be an author, but be a businessman. I often say that I'm a combination of my parents. I have a right brain parent and a left brain parent. And my mom's an accountant and my dad's a charismatic businessman who got ahead by just being the nicest guy who learned people's names. And my mom got ahead by being the person who can find the missing penny when no one else can. And I'm a kind of a synthesis of those two. I always say that as a writer, when I'm writing the book, I do my best to just tell the best story I can. No other considerations. But when the book is done, the business person shows up, locks the author in the closet, takes the manuscript, runs away, and then exploits it in any human way possible to get more food for the writer so that we can keep producing these books. That was, at least in the early days of my career, very literal. It's like, now how do we make any money off this so we can actually have time to write another book? These days, it has grown to quite large measures. We have 35 employees now. We're looking to have 60 by the end of the year, just because we need to fulfill on the Kickstarter, which is going to take an extra large fulfillment team. We thought that we were going to be shipping out 20 or 30,000 books, and it turns out we are going to be shipping out 600,000. So, that's different. What values do we have? I believe strongly that by being a business owner, my job is to try to provide the best job possible. My job is not to maximize profits. My job is to provide a good working environment. That's what I think a boss's job should be. And I think we've lost that in the era of large corporate stockholders and things like this. I believe in kind of the old school mentality that my employees, I'm asking them for their lives. And so I should in return express my values to them. For instance, I believe that if you're going to hire someone and you believe the church's teachings that people should be able to spend time with their families, and that when children are young, it's best when one parent is in the home, that I can't in good conscience pay less than what a living wage is for a single income family of four. And so we looked up what that is. And if you're working for me full time, I can't pay morally a wage less than that. In Utah, it's about $26 an hour is what they say you would need in order to support a family of four off of one income. And if I feel like we've lost track of that, right? It's so easy to not look at the people and just look at the profits. And it's so easy to be a CEO and not say, oh, I believe in these values, but then not do anything about it. And I think that that's a little bit of moral corruption entering our society. I make sure that we have a minimum there. And then the other big thing that I believe in is that people do better when they have ownership. And that everyone in the company, even in a small company like mine, should participate in success and have a percent of profit-based bonus. And so whatever level you are in my company, you are going to get a bonus based on how well the company did the previous year. When the Kickstarter, when we have a Kickstarter of this level, it turns into a $50,000 bonus for everybody in the company, right? Like if I do very well, they should do very well. And these are sorts of things that that are ideals for me that I wish were more strongly expressed in our business culture at large, even though it's a bad idea, strictly business-wise. I always think back to when I heard President Faust once in a priesthood session, get up in priesthood session in the early 2000s and look at the crowd and say, pay off your home. And they said, this is against the business advice of investing the money that you could have done to pay off your home. You will earn more money by not paying off your home. And he says, I'm telling you, and I'm paraphrasing President Faust here, it's been 20 years. I'm telling you that paying off my home, this is still him, was the best decision for bringing peace of mind and security to my family that I did financially. And I'm recommending that you do that. Bad business advice, good spiritual advice, right? Even though it has to do with money. And I think that as members of the church, if our spiritual side is not influencing the way we create our businesses and specifically our payment policies and things like that, then why are we even members of the church if it's not changing our behavior? So anyway, that's me ranting a long time and what might be a controversial topic. But I find it hard to believe that we should be paying people as little as we often are.
Thank you for sharing that. I think that that's very indicative of the type of leadership that you're bringing to your company. I've also noticed in your books, so many of your characters are these great leaders. Sazed is a great leader. Kelsier is a great leader. Kaladin is a great leader. Who would you consider your models for leadership that have helped you develop these qualities in yourself and have informed your writing these characters? Yeah.
So I read a lot of books and I kind of learn from a lot of different people. I like learning from Caesar, though he was not a very good person. And I like learning from Churchill. I like reading what everybody has to say and doing my best to kind of pick different philosophies for each character. Spiritually, I would say King Benjamin is one of my favorites. In fact, if I'm going to pick a favorite section of the Book of Mormon, it's Mosiah, the early chapters of Mosiah, right? Because King Benjamin's speech is deeply influential to me. A lot of people ask what specific things from my religion have ended up in the books. There's not a lot that I've deliberately done. There's obviously lots of unconscious things. But one of the deliberate ones is that the Way of Kings, the in-world book, is based on King Benjamin's speech. I consider Noah Don, who's the author of that book, to be a King Benjamin analog. And that's one of the things that I can point to and say, yes, that is a direct influence. And what the Way of Kings is a kind of book-length version of King Benjamin's teachings with lots of parables in it. And so I would say that there are tons, and it's nice because one of the things the church does is it forces us to take leadership positions early on. You know, you got to be the deacon's quorum second counselor. You're 12. All right, let's go with it. And these are things that you learn very early on, public speaking and being a leader and having to teach. You just got to learn those skills as members of the church, and they have all served me extremely well in my job. I wouldn't have thought that I would need public speaking being a writer, but the amount of public speaking that I do and that I need, and I can trace that back to, you know, having to speak in church as a 16-year-old, right? I mean, no one wants to speak in church when they're 16. No one wants to speak in church pretty much ever if you talk to most people. But you know, you learn it. You learn how to teach somebody a principle. And writing is all about conveying ideas clearly. And so a lot of this just kind of I picked up seeing how when my dad was a high councilman, how he did things. When my uncle was a bishop, how he did things. How, you know, when I was in a elders quorum presidency, how we did things. And I think that helps just a ton.
Brandon, do you have time for one more quick question?
I do.
And we can edit this out if you'd like, mm-hmm. but I just had this thought and I just wanted to ask you, because you're an author, you get the church, obviously, Joseph Smith gets a lot of criticism for writing the Book of Mormon. And I'm curious, if you've noticed anything in the Book of Mormon and how it's been written, how would Joseph Smith write that as a 14-year-old or as an 18-year-old? How would he do that? And are there, in other words, when people say, well, you know, that was Joseph Smith, that wasn't divinely inspired, if you have any thoughts on that from an author perspective?
You know, I don't think I could have done it. I find the Book of Mormon to be a very powerful book in a different way than the stories I write are powerful. And I try not to focus too much on the on textual proofs. I don't think they get us very far because my testimony is based in the Spirit. And so I haven't spent a lot of time saying, oh, there's a thing that is proof that this couldn't have been Joseph Smith writing it, right? I do think that keeping track of that many names, places, and all these things is extremely difficult. And people would have noticed the mountains of notebooks that he had keeping track of all of this if he were doing it in a traditional fantasy author sort of way. I can only do it with a 400,000 word wiki, right? I still get a ton of things wrong that I have. 50 people read a Cosmere book after I finished it to find all the continuity errors and bring them to me, right? But I don't like to focus on that stuff because saying, you know, my testimony is tied to this, I think is a false way to approach it. If you're to say my testimony is tied to the fact that the archaeological evidence is, proved that they had cement when the Book of Mormon said they had cement, well, then your testimony is tied to when, you know, if they find, oh, that cement wasn't actually the cement that we thought it was. And then later on, we find out that it was again. You know, it's like tying your testimony to whether or not butter is good for you. Right. In my life, it's been bad. It's been good. It's been bad. It's been good. It's been bad. I don't think while I enjoy those things, I think your testimony needs to be based in the Spirit. That's the whole point of what we've been taught, is you need a testimony that is a result of a direct relationship with God, based in the things you've been taught, going to him, asking if they're true, and having the Spirit confirm it to you. We need to be led by the Spirit and have the Spirit be our guide. And so while I find these things fun, I don't look at the Book of Mormon and say, could a fantasy novelist have written this? You know what? Because I think that misses the point. You know what? Maybe. I think it would be very unlikely, but maybe someone could just type, right? Or if he didn't have a typewriter, but you know what I mean? And it turned out all right. There's the whole monkeys and Shakespeare thing, right? Like if you tie your testimony to whether or not it could have been done, well, then you're ignoring the Spirit, because there are a lot of good books out there, right? Could the Quran have been written? Well, take it to God and ask him, right? Like that's the whole point of what we do in life. There are a lot of great philosophies that are very intriguing to the mind. There are a lot of philosophies with pieces of truth in them. There is a lot of the Spirit getting good people to do good things. And I think that having a direct relationship with our Heavenly Father through his Son, Jesus Christ, and the Spirit is the way to build a testimony. So that's kind of a half answer to your question.
That's a great answer. Mm-hmm. Brennan, we are so appreciative for you. Thank you so much for taking your time and being here with us today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
And thank you to all of our listeners. We'll be back again next month with our next episode of the Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast. Have a great week.